Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Sixth Sens Podcast.
What's up, Sense fans? You're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast. It's an overcast and muggy day here in the nation's capital. I'm joined in studios by Francois. Tim's away. He's in Montreal for the weekend. Francois, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. It's surprising as the summer keeps like going along, we keep coming into the studios and like each week we're like, well, what the hell are we going to talk about? Nothing's really happening. But then, you know, like a couple days ago, we get the announcement that Zach Smith and Colin Greening have signed multi-year deals on one-way contracts. And then Binghamton clinches their Eastern Conference Finals, and now they're headed towards the Calder Cup. And it's just like every week, it's just there's something else, and kind of hash this out. But it should be a good show today. We have TSN's Scott Cullen coming on later on, talk to us about his off-season game plan for the Senators, so we can talk a little bit about Ottawa's rosterbation moving forward. So,
for sure, and you know, I personally hope that that off-season game plan does include Francis Lessard, just such a valuable chip.
And the dog,
I can't. I can't believe that Greening and Smith got one-way deals, and Lessard. We're still waiting on his status, right?
Are you actually surprised by the one-way deals though?
Not so much for Zach Smith, just because like he's been in the organization for a little bit. A little bit more surprised on the one for Greening.
They're both kind of. They're not really young guys. Like, they are, but they're not, you know? Like, Zach Smith's been with the organization for a number of years. I think he's, like, 23 years old. He was drafted as a 20-year-old. And Greening, because he was a collegiate prospect, he's 25.
Maybe, like, Brian Murray's watching Jose Bautista highlight reels and figures he can, like, get the next late-blooming 50-goal scorer or something.
Yeah, but it's just, I guess it's because, their NHL careers are still in their infant stages and...
Yeah, and the other thing is, I mean, Ottawa's sort of a team in transition, so we kind of need those cheap guys to just fill out the roster for now.
Yeah, so you have to get excited about these guys when they actually come into the organization and kind of perform better than some of the incumbent veterans.
Right.
I wanted to talk to you because you're later this summer, you're going away to graduate school down in Georgia. And one of the things you're actually kind of looking forward to is like being able to go to Atlanta and catch some Thrashers games on the dirt cheap. And yeah, it looks like that's not happening anymore.
Yeah, no, like it's a little bit disappointing, right? Because I'm going to be living pretty much right downtown. Phillips Arena is literally a 5-minute walk from campus. So I was kind of looking forward to getting some cheap tickets on some Thrashers game, going to see the Senators when they came down there. A little bit unfortunate, but I mean, luckily I have three other major sports that I can divert my attention to. The one thing that I find kind of weird is, like, Gary Bettman seems hell-bent on keeping the Coyotes in Phoenix, yet he just is prepared to let the Thrashers up and fold, so...
It's weird how there are some prospective owners for the Phoenix situation that actually want to keep the team in Phoenix, and that city's actually going to massive lengths, like $25 million, you know. The city of Glendale is willing to absorb that cost just to keep them in town. Whereas Atlanta, like it just seems like that's happened relatively quickly in comparison to how the Phoenix situation is panning out.
Yeah, well, I guess the thing is with Atlanta is whoever bought like the building and the Hawks and like basically the Thrashers, I guess, were just thrown into that. You can understand from a business standpoint how someone, I mean, the Thrashers are a sunken cost, right?
Oh, so, absolutely.
It doesn't make much sense from a business standpoint. If you own the Hawks, you own the building, and you can't bring in, you know, if you have the Thrashers playing 40 games there a year, that's, you know, lost opportunity to bring in performing artists or whatever else that you can actually make money on. So I can understand from a business standpoint why whoever bought the Hawks in the building and the Thrashers, you know, would be more than happy to get rid of the Thrashers, right? So... But it is unfortunate. The one thing is, like, this whole southern expansion of the NHL, like, what a bunch of fucking smoke and mirrors this thing's been since the beginning. And I think, like, this whole Atlanta thing is very sort of demonstrative of this whole thing, right? Like, if he can't keep teams in these southern markets, I mean, how is he supposed to get the big TV contracts, right?
I think, like, looking at the situation, it's interesting to see, like, a number of these franchises be granted expansion stats, like looking back and to see like who was running these teams, and you look at names like Doug McClain, Don Waddell. Well, I guess Florida actually had Brian Murray running it, and they had a small bit of success early on in their stages of the franchise. But many of those teams have been like, they haven't been blessed with great management from like a player personnel standpoint. Like they've run the gamut. Like they're stuck in that perpetual state of mediocrity, and it seems like they've never graduated from that level. They're like, they're caught between trying to make the playoffs so they can get like that buzz generated in the community and get some like attention from American sports fans. And it's just, they've never been able to like retain that group of fans whenever they built up a little bit of buzz.
Yeah. I mean, aside from the Tampa Bay Lightning, who have gone through spurts where they've had moderate success in terms of attendance, like when they do well and whatnot, a lot of these teams in these non-traditional hockey markets, it's like you say, it's almost like they've been, it's just as much poor management as it is. So it's not, I don't think it's necessarily that they're in a market that's not conducive to building a fan base
right.
for hockey, but I think you're right. It's almost like a chicken or the egg thing. It just seems weird that in a lot of these non-traditional hockey markets, it seems like poor management's been just as much a factor as the market dynamics itself, right?
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
And I think if you even look at Phoenix, like they've had trouble developing their own prospects. You've seen busts like, it's still too early to be calling them busts, but guys like Peter Mueller have been shipped out of town. They traded him for Wolski. He's gone. Turris is another guy who's been fighting to get his ice time, but they've been slowly bringing him about, and then he finally got some second line minutes late in the playoffs.
Yeah, aside from Martin Hanzel and Keith Yandel,
yeah.
I mean,
no,
not a lot of those prospects have really panned. Like, whatever happened to Vladimir Ruzicka that they drafted a couple years ago?
There's another Russian kid. Tikhonov was there.
Yeah.
They've had some other ones too. It's just, and Minnesota's kind of been like a team like that. Mind you, their fan base is more supportive. It's that like Minnesota state's like a hockey hotbed.
I was talking to my brother the other day, and he brought up kind of an interesting little observation, which is like, let's imagine, because this is sort of on the heels of me saying like I could see Tampa taking the whole thing this year, because I think they have that streakiness that like a team, they have that ability that if they get hot at the right time, I think they can just plain outscore anybody. And that's why I could see them potentially taking the whole thing. And he just said to me, he's like, imagine if Vancouver went to the Cup Finals and against Tampa, and Tampa beats them. So you'll have had the last four Canadian like representing teams in the Cup Finals that will have lost to like these Sun Belt Southern teams, like Tampa against Calgary, Carolina against Edmonton, Anaheim against Ottawa, and then like Tampa again against Vancouver. It's kind of like a bit of a stomach punch for Canadian hockey fans, right?
Yeah, like, you'd have to go back to what, like the Rangers beating Vancouver in 94.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways. No, but that's an interesting dynamic, and it just kind of goes to show you like how the league's kind of developed over the past 10, 15 years. We've been talking about like player development with these non-traditional markets and how some haven't really excelled. We've been talking a lot lately on the show, looking forward to the draft coming up, and we're seeing Jonathan Huberdeau rise up the ranks steadily because he's still playing in the Memorial Cup. And it's just the buzz around this kid is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, I'm starting to think that Ottawa actually might have a chance to grab a guy who was more highly touted about 2 weeks ago because of all this buzz that's being generated by this kid.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, right? Because I think a lot of times when we talk about drafting, and this is in all sports, you have those one or two GMs that'll always talk themselves into that player, and they'll always take him probably a little bit higher than he should go just because they want to hit that home run so bad. And I think Huberdeau has that written all over him. Like, I could see, well, he probably won't go second because I think Colorado will take the best player on the board, and that'll probably be Adam Larson. I could totally see Florida just talking themselves into taking Huberdeau at three. And then it's a crapshoot because I could, and then at that point, if Huberdeau goes third, I could see Landeskog falling down to sixth.
Yeah, possibly. I guess
if Jersey wants Couturier, like if Jersey
yeah,
wants
well,
a big center, they
that's
take
the
Couturier.
Catch, right? You hope that a team like New Jersey or the Islanders will take a defenseman. Like one of those two teams, hopefully, will take a defenseman, and then Ottawa will get their pick of whomever. But do you think Ottawa will trade up? Like we've heard some ramblings, obviously, in the local media and on sports radio here in the city, and reading some of the newspapers and. It seems to be like the consensus opinion is that Ottawa will make a move if need be to get the guy that they want.
I really think the only guy worth making a move for is is Landeskog, because I honestly think at six, I'm thinking that at six we're either going to get Couturier or Huberdeau anyways.
Or even Strom. I think
that's a wash. I think it's a total wash. Like I don't think it's worth, unless you're getting Landeskog, who's a guy who can step in right away, and I think it's going to be a good solid NHL. You know, and you can sort of build a team not around him, but he can be part of that core group moving forward. I don't see the sense in moving up.
It's almost somewhat reminiscent of like that 2009 draft with like you had your defenseman going like Doughty, Bogosian. And Shen,
Peter Angelo.
It kind of reminds me of that draft here where it's, you have a bunch of good players, not a lot of separation between them. And most, well, I guess Bogosian had a little bit of a rough go this season, but he's had two good years in the league already. So hopefully it's like that. Hopefully there's not a lot of separation. Otto can find hopefully the best of the lot. But I'm sure there's good talent that will be available at that spot. So I'm not too concerned about it if they don't trade up.
Yeah,
but it's going to be fun. It's fun to speculate leading up to the draft because it seems like there's a lot of movement going on in terms of ranking the prospects and like who's going to slide where and like what teams are drafting for particular needs. Like you don't really know what a team like Edmonton's going to do, right? Because you have the Larson Nugent Hopkins thing going on and you're like, well, they need a number one center and they also need a franchise defenseman.
Well, and here's the other thing too, right? Is like, let's say, I mean, people assume that Edmonton's going to take Nugent Hopkins. What if they take Larson? Like, then just, I mean, this is so interesting, right? Because then does Colorado turn around and take Nugent Hopkins? Like, I don't know. Maybe Colorado at that point, because they don't really need that number one center, they don't have a pressing need for it. Like, maybe they take Landeskog 2 and Nugent Hopkins slides to 3. Like, anything could happen. Like,
or they trade down, and then, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, because Ottawa has a wealth of picks, right? So, I mean, they have the means. They have the quantity to do it. It's just a matter of, is this draft strong enough where they can actually go and make that move and like justify and say, yeah, we got ourselves the best. And like, you know.
Yeah, because based on the conversations we were having with last week on the podcast, like it doesn't seem like, you say, there's a whole lot of separation there between the top end talent in the draft. So it's like, are you really going to pay a premium to move up that extra spot? It's not like you're going from... I mean, going back to that the Luke Shen draft, right? It's just, it would have been totally nonsensical for any of those like top four teams. Like, let's say Doughty, like those defensemen were so similar, at least on draft. Like, you wouldn't have thought back then that Doughty would have ended up being head and shoulders better than the other three guys. Like, it just would have been totally nonsensical for like the team drafting fourth to trade up two spots to get a guy who was arguably going to be similar to the guy they were going to get at four anyways,
but,
right?
Like, but it's a great parallel in the sense that a guy like Bogosian was one of the first ones in the league, but he might not necessarily be the best now. You know, like we've seen, like Peter Angelo took a while to develop and he came in, this was his rookie season, or it should have been, but he didn't qualify because he was one game over or something. He didn't match the criteria for the league. But he had probably one of the best seasons out of that lot, him and Doughty. So... it's interesting because you might get the best player in 3 years at the latest spot. So it is interesting from that perspective. Like whoever might be the best player a year from now might not be the best player 2 years from now. And I think that's something that every Sens fan take a look at and say, all right, well, whoever we get might not be the best player right away.
Yeah. It's like you say, it'll be really interesting. And I think the reason why it'll be really interesting is this Huberdeau just – like basically getting like hot at the right time leading in the draft. The only other guy who's been hotter this year, like timing wise, is Jack Layton in Quebec. So I mean, like Huberdeau is, and this, I think this is really what, because I think the draft order was more or less set until he really started to rise the ranks, and now it's like I'm telling you, there's someone somewhere is going to talk themselves into taking him higher than he probably should go. I'm thinking it's going to be Florida.
Possibly the Islanders. I could totally see the Islanders making a play.
Yeah, but I mean, the Islanders are drafting fifth, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if he goes fifth, that's probably where he should go.
True. Fair point.
I would not be surprised if Florida took him at three. I think two would be a real stretch, just because I think Nugent Hopkins and Larson are going to be the one and two.
I want to get a Sixth Sense draft party going for the entry draft. Like, I just want to be completely bombed when that draft's going on.
I remember watching the draft last year, and like, and this is interesting, right? Like when you see like these teams have their game plans and like something happens, but they're so set on their game plan. It's like, there's no, sometimes it's like this guy, like Fowler slid forever last year. Cause he was expected to go what? Like top four.
I think he was like top five.
He didn't. And then the team's drafting like 6 to 10, like they never even fathomed they could get him. But they didn't even draft him, right? Because they didn't even, like, they had never scouted him really, because they never even thought that he was going to go down that, you know what I mean? So,
well, I think teams fall into that trap of drafting for need. It's not as bad as watching like Brady Quinn slide down the draft board like years ago. But yeah, it's sort of similar in the same kind of, in that kind of context.
Does Phil Kessel slide down the All-Star draft board? Oh, who was it the NBA draft or the NFL draft where, I think it was the year like Babcock drafted Villanueva.
Oh yeah.
And someone who was supposed to go high just kept sliding and sliding, and I think he got drafted like in the 20 some picks. Like he was one of the last guys. Yeah, like of the guys who chose to attend the draft, like he was in there for an uncharacteristically long amount of time.
That's awesome.
Like, well, I mean, Babcock comes out, you know, 11 pick or whatever it was, or takes Charlie V, and then, but that's neither here nor there, but it's just funny. Like Fowler was the same way last year. It's just like he keeps sitting in the and the camera keeps panning to him, right? So
it was a crappy, while we're speaking of like Rob Babcock and like Toronto sports for a second, it was kind of a crappy week for Toronto sports.
Oh man, you had Brian Colangelo contract.
Yeah, you had the Colangelo contract extension. They slip in the draft to fifth overall.
It's like what's, I was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast, and it's like he's saying, like, the Raptors always get hosed. Like, whenever they're in a position to get a high draft pick, they never do. Like, they never move up in the lottery.
Draft, yeah.
And whenever they do get the top pick, like, they got the top pick the Bargnani year, which was probably one of the worst draft classes in the history of the NBA.
Yeah.
They can't catch a break.
Batista aside, the Jays have been relatively mediocre. Like, they're a meddling club.
Yeah.
Typical of them.
And with, actually, it's too bad that they can't string a couple wins together, because the AL East has been...
Oh, it's wide open. I think they're a game out right now.
Yeah. It looks like the Red Sox are finally starting to get it going, but, yeah. I mean, they stumbled long enough that it could have been there for the taking if the Jays had really played good ball.
Yeah, and the Yankees don't have the pitching depth.
No, I think the Yankees are cooked.
And so what else is there? We talked about the Jays, Raptors, and, oh, Tyler Seguin had his 4.9. And you know, like the hockey media in Toronto, just boom.
My brother lives in Toronto, right? And he was talking about that. He's just like, Leafs fans are just beside themselves right now. And it wasn't so much like the 4.9, but he scored a couple of ridiculous goals too in the last couple of games.
But one of the things that nobody mentions is that, like, throughout his career, I think it's like 14 playoff games, Phil Kessel has 14 points.
Yeah.
It's just the Leafs aren't a playoff team yet.
No. No, that's it. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting, though, because, like, I could totally see Colangelo just... Mind you, it's not a very good draft either this year.
Those are after Euro.
Oh, no, he'll take Enos Kanter for sure. He's totally taking Enos Kanter.
He's going to go, like,
Kanter.
Second overall,
that guy is just... He's shooting way up the board, and he's just...
Well, it's like, such a bad draft, man. It's a terrible draft.
Imagine that front court of Enos Kanter and Bargnani. Like, that would just be the softest front court.
So, this has been a pretty fluff segment. I thought we'd have more to talk about that were Senators-related.
No, you know, everyone's thinking it. We're going to verbalize it. I mean, there's not a lot to talk about right now.
But joining us after this will be Scott Cullen. We'll get into a little bit of a roster pontification. All right, listeners, we're joined on the line right now by TSN Scott Cullen, the fantasy guru. Scott, how are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
Not too bad, thanks. So what are your thoughts right now on the NHL playoffs, and who are some of the biggest surprises that you've seen thus far?
Well, the playoffs to me haven't been surprising in terms of the results so much. I mean, Tampa Bay is a team that I didn't really expect to go, I guess, this far, but at the same time, they ended up playing two teams that I wasn't particularly high on in the first place. So, you know, the fact that they got past the Penguins and Capitals, I sort of shrugged my shoulders at it. I didn't think much of either team. So, but when it comes to kind of the other teams that are there, those are the teams that I had, I guess, the highest expectations for coming into the playoffs. So, and I could have gone either way, really, with the way San Jose, Detroit, that series. I think I picked Detroit when I was doing my playoff picks, and then when I looked at like my final season rankings, I think I had San Jose 3 and Detroit 4. So it was so close that I really couldn't you know, get too upset one way or the other with how that was going. If you want to talk individually, I think Sean Bergenheim is obviously an amazing story. A guy who scored 14 goals in the regular season, now has 9 in the playoffs to lead all scorers. I think that's a big reason why a team like Tampa Bay can, you know, advance to where they have, because when all of a sudden you have a third line guy who is an impact player offensively in the playoffs, it makes a huge difference. And it kind of covers for, you know, if a guy like Steven Stamkos isn't scoring at you know, previous rates and things like that, it's nice to have somebody else pick up the ball.
I mean, the interesting thing with Tampa, right, is that they literally squeak it out in 7 games against Pittsburgh. So on the Eastern Conference side, is it kind of fair to say that basically the way it has shaken down essentially comes down to the health of Sidney Crosby and or of Genny Malkin? Like, if one of those two guys are healthy in that series, the playoff picture in the East is probably entirely different at this point.
Yeah, I would for sure. And particularly because the East feels like any team could have won. And I guess, like, if you had Malkin or Crosby to Pittsburgh, yeah, you would definitely think that makes a difference in a series against Tampa Bay. And why wouldn't they go just as far as Tampa Bay has, and you know, if they had Malkin and or Crosby? And you know, Boston going up against Pittsburgh, it's not like Boston would feel any better about that than what they have going against Tampa Bay right now. So, yeah, I think that injury, particularly the Crosby injury, I mean, Malkin was out relatively earlier, but the Crosby injury probably, you know, shaped the whole playoff picture in the Eastern Conference.
What the hell's wrong with Danny Heatley?
and not to say this the wrong way, but I think in some ways Heatley has kind of gotten very comfortable in his career, and
like Charles Barkley comfortable.
yeah, and you know, that's, I mean, and I don't know his day-to-day work ethic, but I get the impression over the last few years that he's kind of gotten a little lazy. And, you know, he's a guy who scores enough goals that he kind of gets able to write off the not putting in the effort, because as long as you're scoring the way he is, or what he was, no one's going to push you too hard to do all the other things. And now I think there's kind of a danger with Heatley that the end of his career could come quicker than it should if he doesn't kind of change his work ethic in that, because, you know, it's all well and good to be to cruise around and score 40 goals a year, and then, you know, if you cruise around and score 26 goals a year, well, teams aren't going to be quite as willing to pay you the big money, which is, you know, obviously what he's getting now. And if that doesn't revert, you know, in the next few years to you know, 30, 35 goals plus, well, it's going to be pretty easy to keep Danny Heatley on the bench.
It's funny that you bring up his conditioning, because when he first requested the trade from Ottawa, I remember he showed up for the Olympic training camp over at West, and I believe it was Edmonton or Calgary, and he showed up and he looked like he lost about 30 pounds, and I was thinking to myself, who the hell is this
suddenly
guy?
Suddenly motivated.
Yeah,
right?
Where the hell has this guy been for the last couple of years? But yeah, that's an interesting point. Scott, I just wanted to thank you personally for penning a Senators offseason game plan, because since Ottawa has been out of the playoffs, there's been absolutely little to talk about here in the nation's capital. So right away, I just wanted to ask you, you slotted Ottawa in the sixth spot, and you mentioned three players right away, Sean Couturier, Dougie Hamilton, Ryan Strome as potential draft picks for the Senators. What do you think of Jonathan Huberdeau in particular, and what do you make of his ascent and rise up the draft board?
Well, I mean, I haven't seen a ton of Huberdeau, but I've seen, you know, the numbers he puts up, and I hear you know, people talk about him, and basically I think he's probably gone before the sixth pick would come around. I think that the more and more I hear, the more kind of Huberdeau keeps climbing up the board, that he may end up in the top couple depending on what kind of appeal he has to other teams. I mean, it's possible that he still might be there at six, because I think it's a fairly close call between him and Couturier for a lot of people. I guess there's sort of a there's a difference between the two, is that Couturier really had no supporting cast, and so maybe his numbers weren't quite as good, but at the same time, Huberdeau had better talent surrounding him, and so that's why the numbers are that much better. And you're going to have kind of scouts fall, I guess, on either side, where some will like Huberdeau, some will like Couturier. If it happens that the fourth and fifth team, if one of those teams decides, oh no, they like Couturier better, I guess it's possible that Huberdeau would be the guy who could fall to the Senators too. And look, really, either one of them is a good upgrade for what that franchise needs. They could use some more scoring down the middle, for sure.
You mentioned Nick Foligno, and this is someone that Francois and I have talked ad nauseum about, and in terms of his growth and potential. Talking to some of the people who've covered the team for the past few years, they've always kind of envisioned Foligno as a potential top six guy, whereas Francois and I have always seen him as like a good, capable third line guy. I think if we had to look at Foligno from a trade perspective, this would probably be the opportune time. While people still view him as a potential top six guy, I think this would be like the perfect opportunity to trade a guy like that. What are your thoughts on Nick Foligno?
That's a fair point, that if you were going to consider trading him, do it now while there's still some debate over whether he's a top six forward or further down the depth chart. Because maybe by the end of next season there will be no debate, and you'll know one way or the other that he's definitely a third line forward, or he's definitely a top six guy. I guess that, so if you're going to make the decision now, there's a bit of a roll of the dice, and Ottawa as a team, they should know one way or another what they think a Nick Foligno can become. And I think that if you gave him kind of the right line mates, that he could be a 20 goal guy, and generally that's good enough to be a top six forward. At the same time, if you were to give him that opportunity this year and he ends up scoring 16 goals, and you'd probably shrug your shoulders and go, well, okay, we were wrong. Now he probably is a third line guy. And so I don't have a great feel on Foligno whether or not he's going to become a top six forward who's going to score 20 goals and 50 points for years to come, or if he's going to be a guy who's in that 35 to 40 point range for the next 10 years.
You also talked about the Ottawa blue line, and with the development, or so we hear, of David Rundblad and some of the other younger kids, it seems like those six spots are starting to get awfully crowded. We have some veterans on the tail ends of their career, so Gonchar, Kuba, Phillips specifically. Where do you think Kuba actually fits into the mix here? His season last year was substandard, I think, in comparison to most of our expectations. You think it makes sense to buy him out?
It does seem like a possibility to me that Kuba might be a buyout, and if only because you want to make sure that there's playing time for the other guys, like, as you say, Rundblad and Jared Cowan, too. It's quite possible that those two will not just make the team, but come in and play big minutes right away. And if you're going to have time for them, and you still have kind of all these other guys returning with Carlson and Gonchar and Phillips, there's not a ton of time for Philip Kuba. And for a guy that I think, what's the cap in on $3.7 million for Kuba, that's yep, a lot to pay a guy to kind of hang around at the bottom of your defense depth chart. You could certainly try and trade him, but I don't know how much appeal there is around the league based on what he did last season. So, I think they could probably get away with doing the buyout on Kuba because, one, nobody's going to complain about it happening. Like, there's not going to be an outcry that, oh, we missed out on Philip Kuba, because you have all these other guys that you're trying to build for in the future, and that is the rationale for getting rid of him. And so it saves you a little bit of money, and it's not as though the Sens should be pushing up against the cap next season. It's, so that savings isn't necessarily imperative, but just to clear out the space, it probably makes it worthwhile to buy him out.
I guess that was my kind of rationale for why we would keep Kuba, is that, you know, Ottawa doesn't need the cap space. And I just looked at last season as, like, he wasn't healthy in the offseason. He had back surgery or whatever it was at the end of the season before. And then he suffered a broken leg early in training camp last year. Never really had an opportunity to condition himself and get healthy. And I just kind of viewed him as a guy that they might be able to hold on to till the deadline, and hopefully his trade value appreciates and it'd be better asset management to hold on to him. But yeah, obviously Ottawa has a glutted defenseman, so conceivably he'd be the first one to go. But I always thought Matt Carkner would probably should be the first one to go.
Yeah.
But that's just my personal opinion.
Well, I mean, they're going to provide, I mean, Carkner, what he's providing is different than
absolutely
what you get from Phil Kubin. You can kind of, to me, at least you could get away with, Carkner can be a seventh defenseman more easily than Philip Kuba can. Like, I don't imagine Philip Kuba would be terribly happy to be a seventh defenseman on a team that's, I mean, he might be the sixth defenseman, but, you know, give or take. If he ends up, you know, as a healthy scratch on a team that's, you know, rebuilding and going with a bunch of young guys, he's probably not going to enjoy that too much. In the case of Carkner, he's probably a guy who's still happy to be cashing NHL checks, and, you know, you can insert him when you need the toughness, and you know, when there's another heavyweight on the other team that needs to he needs to square off against.
Could you maybe touch on some of the guys on Ottawa, the more statistical outlier type of guys that have a potential to rebound and maybe put up some better numbers? You know, guy like maybe Milan Mikolic, who regressed a little bit last year, though he had like a decent first year in Ottawa. Is there anyone on the roster that sticks out that might have performed sort of below average or below what was expected of them last year?
Perform below average.
I'm trying to be diplomatic here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you're right on Mikolic. He's a guy who he has plenty of talent. He's got size, and I just wonder whether or not injuries are starting to wear him down. And I know he's not an old man, but I think his knees are probably the knees of an old man, and it makes me think that he's never going to be quite as good as we might have thought he was going to be in his early years with San Jose, and so, you know, he could certainly do better next year than he did this past season. I'd have no doubt about that he, you know, he could be a guy who scores 25 goals, and that seems to be a reasonable expectation. If I look at somebody who underachieved, I thought Peter Regan was, you know, almost a disastrous underachiever last year. I thought he finished so well the year before that I had high hopes for him going into last year for the Sens, and then I think what he finished with 3 goals, that's not quite what I was thinking he might be able to get 20, so 3 is obviously a long way off from that, and yeah, it depends on opportunity for Regan, like who is he going to play with, and whether that's going to, you know, translate into offensive chances and so on, but I do think he's a guy who should be better than he was last year for sure, and I guess really what the center is going to hope for next year is that a lot of the guys who got their auditions late in the year are going to be able to produce more and do it over a full season. You know, they got some good things out of Bobby Butler and Colin Greening and Eric Condra, but it was kind of in a short stint for the most part, and you need to see whether they can do that you know, for 80 games and do it right off the start when every team is you know, fighting and battling for a position, as opposed to late in the year when sometimes the games aren't quite as meaningful.
I was going to blame Peter Regan's production on Alexei Kovalev. Seems like in Ottawa we blame Kovalev for everything, so I just thought
it was
fitting.
Yeah, that's easy enough.
Graham likes to make excuses for Regan.
I saw Regan's shot totals, and I think he took less shots last year, so I just think maybe part of it was him deferring to Kovalev more often than he probably should have, and he wasn't shooting the puck enough, personally.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And particularly, like, a guy like Kovalev really dominates the puck, too.
No, exactly.
Like, he can hold on to it and hold on to it and hold on to it, and obviously that Regan, like I said, the year before when he finished, and again, this is kind of going to the argument where if you finish strong, sometimes it isn't going to parlay because you're playing against some teams that aren't necessarily in it and things like that. But when he finished the year before playing with Spezza and had a good playoff series against Pittsburgh, that, you know, that's where I kind of thought that there were some upside. And I mean, look, he scored 13 goals as a rookie a couple years ago. I think it was reasonable to expect that he would improve on that and not fall back the way you did last year.
In your off-season game plan, among the players that you identified that could potentially be on the trade market, we were interested to see that the name Daniel Alfredsson was actually on that list. Can you just sort of elaborate a little bit on that? Do you actually think that this could become a realistic possibility if the Senators underachieve again this year?
Well, and I only say that, and I know I've already received emails from people in Ottawa saying, no, he's fine with the hanging around for the rebuild and so on. And I get that. Like, in many ways, when you spent your whole career in one place, like, Ottawa is home for Daniel Alfredsson. I understand he may not feel like going anywhere else. But at the same time, if Daniel Alfredsson decides that, yes, I really would like a shot at a Stanley Cup in the next couple of years, it's probably not happening in Ottawa. I mean, you can be as optimistic as you like about how the rebuild is going to go in Ottawa. I still don't think they're a cup team in the next 2 years. And so that's the only reason I kind of have him listed there is, and really Ottawa would do it as a favor for Alfredsson to, yes, if there is a place he would like to go, we will try and accommodate and get more assets to build for the future. It's the fit of a 38-year-old player who's nearing the end of the line, and can still be a useful player. He obviously didn't have the year that he wanted to last year because of injuries, but I think we've seen that he has been awfully productive into his late 30s compared to some other players who fade away quicker than that. So I think if the opportunity was there to play on the right team, and I don't know who the right team is for him, but I think he would. I don't want to get into his head and say that, he would have to consider it, because maybe he wouldn't. Maybe he'd say, look, I'm happy where I am and I'm just going to stay here. But I think if the opportunity is there and presented to him, that at least it's fair to put him out there as a guy who could get moved.
What's interesting with Alfredsson is we're still not really sure if last year those injuries were sort of the product of, well, this is the natural aging process for someone his age, and these types of injuries are going to occur more frequently because, well, there's a lot of mileage on his body, or if this was just sort of, I don't want to say a freak thing, but a sort of a one season thing, and he can bounce back and play at a high level for the next 2, 3, maybe even 4 years. So it'll be kind of interesting to see in terms of his health, if that was more of like the regression or of him because he's just getting older and more prone to injury, or if these injuries are things that he's going to be able to get over and still be able to play at a high level.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, if this is something, and particularly because he stayed out for quite a while through to the end of the season, and once you add an off season in, like, he could come back next season, right back at full health and feeling great. And I mean, it was just he's a year removed from being a point per game player, so. If you want to put that back in the lineup and he's still kind of feeling that way, then that's great. I mean, I'll be interested, as you say, it'd be interesting to see whether or not this is kind of the end coming awfully quickly, as these injuries are just sort of a byproduct of a guy who's played over 1,000 NHL games and the wear and tear that comes with that, or was it just a one-off kind of thing that he can recover from and continue to be productive for a few more years.
I just hope if the team gets off to a poor start, that if Alfredsson is healthy and playing again, that it wouldn't turn itself into like a Matt Sundin's redux where everyone...
And that's because that ends up I live in Toronto, so I get sort of bombarded with the Leaf info, and so it happened with Sundin, and it happened here for years with Cabrelle, is that everybody wants them to go, right? And they basically, a guy like Matt Sundin was the face of the Leaf franchise for a decade, and at the end, everybody just wants him to leave so that they can get a couple draft picks for him, and, that's really not, a just way for a guy who's been the face of the franchise for them to leave, and you don't want that to happen with Alfredsson any more than you want it to happen to the Sundin or Cabrelle, because in Cabrelle's case, you found that he was probably just too comfortable in Toronto, and it was better for him there, because once he moved on, it got awfully ugly.
I noticed in your needs section for Ottawa this year, you mentioned a second line center, two top four defensemen, and a backup goaltender. Is that it?
Well, you can always get more. Usually when I'm doing teams who are outside the playoffs, I kind of look at the needs for, okay, what could make this team a playoff team? And you have to do that based on what's already on the roster too. And you know, where is it reasonable to fit these guys in? And so, yeah, I look at a second line center, the two top four defensemen. I mean, the two top four defensemen could be Rundblad and Callen possibly. But yes, if you bring in a good second line center, maybe that is enough to turn the Senators around and get to the playoffs. And in some respects, I think that the most fascinating thing to see is whether Craig Anderson is the Craig Anderson he was 2 years ago for Colorado, because good goaltending will make a huge difference for Ottawa. I think they didn't have a lot of good goaltending in the last few years, and if you have a goaltender like Anderson was at least a couple of years ago, he was above average, and when he came over after the trade, he played pretty well too. So if that carries on for a full season, maybe that is really what all the Senators are going to need, is, you know, a second line center to help balance out some scoring. And obviously this is an assumption that you have a healthy Alfredson producing, so maybe that is what the team needs. But part of it is, I think that the Senators are going to be giving time to Greening and Butler and Condra and those guys, so you're not going to go making moves that are going to bump those guys out of the lineup.
Can you maybe talk about some of the UFAs out there that could be interesting fits in Ottawa, guys that maybe sort of lost their way the last couple of years or have that potential and maybe could come in and contribute to sort of our lack of goal scoring?
Yeah. I know one of the guys who I think is, I mean, it's not a great free agent class. I think we're all aware of that this year, that, you know, Brad Richard seems to be like the one marquee name. I know you got guys like Solani and Lidstrom, but I don't think anyone believes that they would play anywhere other than their current team. So you end up going with a pretty thin roster of free agents when you start looking. But I think one of the guys who might be underrated a little bit is Jussi Jokinen. And not that Jussi Jokinen is a franchise savior by any means, but he's been a pretty productive player in Carolina the last couple of years, and I think he's a guy who is likely to find a decent offer on the open market. Whether he's and the fact that he's also been able to play center and wing, that you know, I think he's a useful guy who, because of that versatility, can fit in a lot of places. And yes, he could probably fit in Ottawa if they were to, you know, if he was the second line center that they went to go with. I think you could take a shot at that. There are all kinds of the guys who have sort of struggled in recent years that maybe they're the ones who are going to have value. I think it's possible that Tim Connolly is going to have good value for somebody, but boy, I think you really have to swallow hard before rolling the dice on him, because he's really been inconsistent, and this year was an ideal opportunity for him to put up big numbers and to lead the Sabres while Derek Roy was out, and he kind of failed miserably, I'd say. So those are a couple guys that I would consider as the second line center possibilities. I don't know that I could really recommend Connolly. I think when it comes down to it, you'd probably rather spend the money on Jokinen and feel safer doing it.
Yeah, that's health is such a big deal these days, especially when you're talking about headshots and concussion histories. You mentioned guys like Jokinen and Higgins in your piece, and like Francois and I've talked off air, and like we've mentioned that it might be savvy for Brian Murray to go out and maybe try and sign a couple of these players and then maybe parlay them at the deadline if Ottawa falls out and recoup some assets and kind of like grow the system a bit that way. But one of the things that we've also brought up is the possibility of maybe trading for an underdeveloped, might not be the right word for it, but maybe a center who hasn't had an opportunity elsewhere, a guy like Kyle Turris, maybe pay a little bit more in terms of young assets to bring in a guy like that who might have the higher upside. What do you think about that, an idea like that?
Yeah, that's not a bad play at all, because certainly in Turris' case, he's a young guy who hasn't, I mean, you would say to this point, he hasn't lived up to expectations. When you get drafted third overall, I know expectations are going to be pretty high, and he hasn't really met them. But in some ways, I think the Coyotes are to blame for that, because they rushed him to the NHL coming out of Wisconsin after his freshman year, and so the fact that he didn't succeed right away, and then he had, you know, basically spent most of last year in the AHL. I guess the ascent to being a scoring center it's been a slow one for him. And on top of that, playing for Dave Tippett, you know, has this sort of grinded out defensive style that doesn't necessarily fit with what you want from Kyle Turris. And so if you're, and I guess we don't know who's going to make the calls the Senators behind the bench. But if you have a coach who's willing to live with the mistakes of a young guy, then sure, that's the kind of player, and whether it's Turris or somebody similar, that, yeah, bring them in and say, look, we're going to pop you into this center role. Jason Spezza is still going to face all the tough defensive matchups, but here's a spot for you to play and put up points. And that's what we want you to do, is put up points. We don't want you to play this stifling defensive game. Just go out and try and get 50 points this year. And I think Turris, it would be it would cost something, because the Coyotes can't easily give up a guy they drafted third overall and take nothing in return. But if the Senators can find the right pieces to entice them, maybe that is the kind of guy who would be worth rolling the dice on. Like you say, a guy who has that upside that just hasn't been realized yet.
Do you think there's a possibility, given the fact that Ottawa has two first-round picks this year? I'm specifically talking about the pick that we got from Nashville, so a late first-round pick. We've seen in the past where teams sort of trade picks to get the negotiating rights for RFAs. Do you think this would be an interesting possibility an interesting scenario to explore, maybe trading the pick we got for Nashville to acquire the rights, negotiating rights to an RFA? I'm thinking someone along the lines of like a Drew Stafford or like a real legitimate top six forward. Do you think it'd be worth sort of giving up picks and maybe prospects to really bring in like a legitimate 20 to 30 goal guy?
Well, if it's going to get you that 20 to 30 goal guy, I mean, I guess in a case of, if it's Stafford would certainly be a nice addition. And if you're doing it with a late first round pick, yeah, I mean, I think late first round picks are much easier to move and not feel too bad about moving them. When you've got those top picks, and look, the Toronto Maple Leafs can tell you, you can get murdered day in and day out for giving away top picks. But once you start, dealing picks in the 20s, down to 30, yes, it has the cachet of it's a first round pick, so the team that gets it can still kind of sell it that way. But the chances of a player in the 20 to 30 range making it as a star are substantially lower than they are from the guys right at the top of the draft. So it's, I'd say, worth exploring. I don't know. I mean, really, if the Senators are going to try and make a move like that, anytime they're trying to make a move in free agency, they know they've got Melnick's deep pockets to pay for somebody if that's really what it's going to take. And so if they if they can use that first round pick to get them a guy who's a restricted free agent, then they know that that no matter what somebody offers, they'll be able to at least match it and have that player in their roster for years to come. I'll be interested to see how the restricted free agent market plays out this year, because the unrestricteds are so uninspiring and kind of not a ton of impact players, but there are some pretty good players that are restricted free agents. So I'll be interested to see whether any teams get a little more aggressive in trying to do the offer sheets and just acquiring some of those players ahead of time.
Last question for you, Scott, before we let you go. You're in Toronto. You watch him on a daily basis. How freakish is Jose Bautista right now?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. The last Jays game I went to was the game they got no hit against the Tigers. But my buddy and I were looking, and we're like, well, look at the lineup. I mean, they don't have Bautista in there. And then Lind ended up going out of the game midway through. It's like, oh, it's a pretty meager lineup. And then all of a sudden you stick Jose Bautista in the middle of it, and it's, he's amazing. He's the best player in baseball, and I think when you consider what his career has been to this point, it's one of the most remarkable stories, that a guy who made a few slight changes to his swing a little over a year ago, and now he is the most dangerous hitter in baseball. It's phenomenal.
It's a fantastic story. Scott, thank you for taking the time on this May long weekend, and hopefully you enjoyed yourself and we can talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Take care. Bye. I always love coming on and doing these shows, talking about roster scenarios and like what the future holds. It's always fun to roster bait.
Yeah,
it's good, like water cooler discussion, right? It's always good fodder, nice filler.
Yeah. Do you think, going back to that RFA conversation, do you think there's anyone out there that's like worth offer sheeting? I think there's, I mean,
I don't have the list in front of me, but like Parise has always been a name that's been kicked around. And that guy, when healthy, is a, you know, he's a top 10 player in the NHL when healthy.
Yeah, I think it's like, it's one of those things where it would suck to give up the draft picks just because like, it's the idea of giving up the draft picks. But it's like, given the fact that we have a top 10 pick this year, we have Spezza, we have the sort of the defensive pipeline, like adding a guy like Parise to the mix and then maybe supplementing that with a few free agents here and there in the coming years, like if that's an offer sheet, like that could be an offer sheet that could get you really close to a couple of runs at the Stanley Cup. Like if it's a move that puts you in a position to win a championship, like I think you consider doing it. No, like,
but
it's,
I think it's one of those scenarios where it has to be an offer sheet over $7 million, or else New Jersey won't match it. But if it is over that threshold, like the maximum threshold, and then Ottawa has to pay like four, I think it's like four first round picks for him or something ridiculous
like that, yeah,
then I wouldn't. But if he's the kind of player who you can trade maybe a defensive prospect to bring in with some other pieces, for sure, why not? But that's the risk, right? Like, you look at Brian Burke, he looked at his team on paper when he traded for Kessel and said, we're on the cusp of being a playoff team. Assuming we get the goaltending that we expect to get, we're, you know, we have a chance to make the playoffs. And obviously Toronto didn't get the goaltending, and they are where they are. It's just, it's one of those risks. Do you think your team's going to be good enough to make that move moving forward, or are you going to be struggling for a year or two?
A really interesting sort of parallel to that is when Boston acquired Josh Beckett for Hanley Ramirez, Anibal Sanchez. There's no question, like, Hanley Ramirez is arguably a generational talent. Like, he's a guy you build a team around. But in making that move, in getting Josh Beckett, that got Boston their second championship of the decade. So it's like, you give up on
but he was also a young, good, great talent. Like, he was, like, you know, in the discussions for a potential, like, NL Cy Young at some point because he was a young power arm that they figured would grow and flourish in Boston. So from their perspective, I cannot completely understand why they made the deal. And yeah, it did, you know, it wound up in a World Series championship. So I guess it worked out both ways for the organization.
Exactly. But I mean, like, what I'm saying is if Beckett would have entirely fallen off the table after 2007, like, I still think you pull the trigger on that trade.
You would never give up a championship.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, you would never give up a championship for having a franchise shortstop for 10 years or whatever it is. You know what I mean? So, and they'll probably end up signing him as a free agent anyways.
And at the time of the deal, Boston's probably like, well, if he prices himself in Florida, he's one of the guys that we'll just trade for again.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, it is freaking sweltering in this booth.
I'm like,
the sweat is just dripping off you.
Yeah. It's, I'm very...
Like, it's warm in here. It's not even from the sequins off your shirt.
No. Rhinestones. Man, easy. It's the James Bond shirt, okay? So that's why I could talk myself into wearing it.
Oh, God. So, a couple more weeks. Playoffs will be over. The entry draft will be shortly upon us.
What are you thinking, man? Like, who do you think we're going to get?
It's exciting because you can completely speculate. It's not set in stone who Ottawa is going to pick, and it's exciting. Like, for the first time in years. Well, I shouldn't say that because Ottawa had the draft in town not too long ago. But it's exciting to look at it now and just speculate as to what Ottawa can do because they have a ton of cards. And will they go all in and move up in the draft and get someone that the organization can rally behind and build upon? Or will they stand pat and continue to assemble quality and quantity? And it's intriguing. Like, I think you could look at it both ways and get excited for either scenario.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty excited about this, you know? It's interesting. Just because I have no clue who we could end up with.
We need a draft party. Okay, here's a question for you. And this is completely speculation on our part. But if Ottawa picks a defenseman at 6, like a Dougie Hamilton or a Ryan Murphy, are you going to lose it?
Not necessarily. But if they pick Dougie Hamilton if they pick a defenseman at 6, that tells me that either that defenseman is getting traded or one of Rundblad or Carlson is getting traded for a legitimate top 6 forward.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can rationalize taking a defenseman at 6, I think.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Could end up being, I don't know, maybe someone who has a glut of top... It could be like there's sort of an unspoken agreement, like almost like sort of a sign-and-trade deal where it's like a team that wants, say, Dougie Hamilton gets Ottawa draft Dougie Hamilton and then you trade him for a top 6 forward that they're willing to part with to get that that defenseman. I don't know if there are any teams out there that
maybe Cody Hodgson or a Turris or like one of those other young guys who hasn't had an opportunity to play in Ottawa. Ottawa could afford them that opportunity in the with their forwards.
Yeah.
Their top forward vacancies, because Marek Svatos probably isn't coming back. And that guy was a key cog in the Ottawa's roster.
For sure.
Anyways, let's wrap it up for another week. Joining us next week, I'm hoping to have a guest on from Puck Prospect so we can talk to us a little bit about some more hockey numbers. Anyways, Francois, thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
On this long weekend. And thanks, listeners, for listening. Tune in. We'll catch you next week.